We're going to look at Isaiah chapter 9 and verses 1 to 6 this evening. Some of the words will be very familiar to you, but some of them maybe not so. But I'll read that passage again. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honour Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You've enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you've shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Driving down Hamble Lane earlier this week, and the traffic was horrendous. Nothing unusual in that. But it was different this time. It wasn't sheer weight of traffic, as it normally is, or a car boot sale holding everything up, or even that man who drives the horse and trap up and down Hamble Lane at the most inopportune moments. It was a lorry. And the lorry was parked half on the pavement and half on the road, and the back was open, and out of the lorry, some delivery men were lifting the most enormous quad bike. Driving past, I thought, somebody is going to be very, very excited on Christmas morning. And then last night, one of our neighbours who works at J Boats in Hamble and delivers boats, he came and parked a 35-foot yacht right outside our garden gate. It wasn't for me, but it was going to be delivered today, probably in time for Christmas. And I'm thinking, that is a really expensive Christmas present. Somebody, again, is A, going to have a lot of problems wrapping that up, and they're going to be very excited. A yacht for Christmas. Now, I'm not trying to give you present envy here, because I want to tell you about a gift this evening that will totally eclipse all other gifts. And the giver was God, and the gift was a child. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. In other words, this is a gift, and this is a gift which is offered to you. And I promise you that wonderful though quad bikes and super yachts and Bugatti Veyrons and mansions might be, they will pale into insignificance compared with what God has given to us in Jesus. But you notice that that part of the text, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, it starts with the word for, which means that it's connected to the previous five verses. And so we have to go back to look at those verses at least in order to understand what it is that this son who is given, this child who's born, is actually going to do. And that sends us back into the early complicated part of chapter 6. And you're looking at it and you're thinking, what on earth is that all about? Zebulun, Naphtali, Galilee of the Gentiles, Midian. Well, if you want to know, ask Hannah afterwards, because she's been studying this all afternoon. Or you can ask me and we'll go into details. But I want to be really simple this evening. I want to be really short and to the point for once. And so just look at those verses. And without worrying about all the technicalities, is there one word that you can think of that sums up the emotion of verses 1 to 5? Are they happy verses, or are they really miserable, sad verses? Well, they're happy, aren't they? And joy is a word that keeps coming out of it. Look at them. Darkness is being turned into light. The people who lived under the shadow of death have had the shadow chased away. That's good, isn't it? If I lived under the shadow of death and I was given the opportunity of moving out of shadow of death town into bright light of Lifeville, I'd be happy about that. And that's what God's saying is happening here. People are coming out of darkness into light. There's joy and great rejoicing. And then we keep hearing this word rejoicing again. And Isaiah uses pictures. It's like harvest time. That's not a miserable time of the year. You've gathered everything in and it's all there ready for the winter. People celebrated. It was happy. Or he then uses the picture of dividing up the spoil after you've just beaten your enemy. Or celebrating after you've beaten your local rivals in the derby match. And it's exciting. It's a time of celebration. And then we've got the captives being set free. Prisoners and slaves becoming free men and women. And then those last verses, they're burning all the old remnants of warfare. War's over. Peace has been won. So next, what brings about all this wonderful joy? Because they are fantastic verses, those first five verses. They're happy verses. What brings them about? Well, here's our word for, and it takes us to the gift. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. All of that wonderful stuff in the first five verses, life, joy, freedom, victory, light, comes about because of a son being born. Now, every safe birth is a happy and joyful occasion, or it certainly should be. But there are lots of births in this world, and they bring great joy to the parents and to the grandparents and to the friends. But there are thousands and thousands of births every single day. I had to look it up. I couldn't resist. And I was amazed at how many births there are in the world every single day. I don't know whether Google's trying to fool me, but it says 365,000 births every day. And I thought, that's wiki, that somebody just made that up. But it wasn't. It was on the World Health Organization plans. That's a phenomenal amount of births. I'm sure most of those births bring great joy to the parents, but not the happiness and the joy that this child brings. And whilst God has a plan for every life, and every single child that's born is precious to God and is made in the image of God and is a joy to God and to us as parents, and some will be teachers, and some will work in factories, and some will be carers, and God will have different things for each person. Nobody that's born in the world today or yesterday or tomorrow or throughout history will be able to do what this child is called to do. Because look what comes next, and the government will be upon his shoulders. So this child is born, this son is given, and God places on his shoulders the government of everything. I'm really glad I'm not a politician. It's the most, well, from my perspective, the most awful career, I reckon, that you, because it inevitably ends in failure. Okay, failure with a good payoff, usually, but you get rejected in the end. But it's a stressful business running a country, even a small country. But this son is born, and onto his shoulders is placed the government of absolutely everything. The rule of all things is given to him. That means he has sole responsibility of mending this broken world, of setting those captives free, of breaking the hold of death, of ending the warfare that we've entered into against God. He's the one who's responsible for mending the brokenhearted and wiping away the tears and healing the wounds and saving a lost people. That's a frankly terrifying responsibility. It's placed onto the shoulders of a child, a baby who's born. He's unique. We saw this morning in the family carol service how almost from day one, it was recognized by the powers of evil that he was unique, and they were trying to kill him. Herod's henchmen were trying to wipe Jesus out, trying to get rid of him. They understood how important he was, what a threat he was to them. But when he preached in his hometown, when he became a man, the inhabitants of that town tried to kill him. They tried to throw him off the cliff. They didn't like him. The Jewish authorities were regularly trying to destroy him. But then there was a more dangerous attack than physical attack. There was spiritual attack. And Satan throws everything that he can at this son, Jesus, to try and trip him up and tempt him and turn him into another failure, because he understands what a responsibility is placed on Jesus' shoulder. And one slip from Jesus, one failure, one wrong word, one bad attitude, one wrong reaction, one sin, and Satan has brought Jesus down, and he's brought the government down. He's brought the hope of this world down, and there'll be no light, no joy, no life, no victory. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, what on earth is God doing? Heaping all that weight of responsibility onto the shoulders of a child. Doesn't he know what we're like? Well, yes, God knows exactly what we're like. And he knows that the very best of us who've been born have failed. When he put responsibility at the beginning of time onto Adam's shoulders, Adam couldn't bear that responsibility. He fell, he sinned, and brought sin and death into the world. He was no match for Satan. So that's why this child is God's son, who's given to us. He's Emmanuel, God with us. God stooped down to carry the weight and the hope of this world, and he won't fail us. Look at the text, he's too wise. He is the wonderful counselor. That means that all the wisdom of God is found in him. He's God's solution to the massive problems of this broken world. The decisions of a king or a leader make or break a kingdom, don't they? Definitely. Adolf Hitler, thank God, made some catastrophic mistakes in the Second World War. Maybe failing to invade Britain after the Dunkirk evacuation, when morale was rock bottom in this country, when the forces were in disarray and defeat, but he stopped at that point. Or going on to invade Russia and not taking into consideration the severity of a Russian winter. And his decisions brought his Reich, his kingdom, crashing down. It was supposed to last for 1,000 years. That was the boast. And of course, it lasted for about 12 years. Well, Jesus' kingdom, we're told here, is destined to last forever. There isn't any end to his kingdom. And so that requires supernatural wisdom. Thank God Jesus has supernatural wisdom. He is the wonderful counselor. He doesn't make mistakes. He didn't while he was on earth. He always did his Father's will. He doesn't now in heaven. Thank God our King is the wonderful counselor. I suspect there are, if you're like me, there are so many times in life where you just don't understand what's going on in your life. And you're frustrated. And you're scared. And sometimes you get angry. And we do, we get angry with God. And the psalmists almost do that sometimes, and they question, but they come back to faith, because while we don't understand, we have a wonderful counselor who does understand. He knows what he's doing, and he does all things well. That's what they said about him while he was living on earth. This Jesus, he does everything well, and he still does today, and the end of time is going to prove that. So he's so wise, you can trust him. He's so strong, he is mighty God. or you could translate that warrior God. And this is really exciting. He is God who's come into our humanity, and he's come to fight. But he hasn't come to fight against us. He's come to fight for us. Don't you love it when someone really big is on your team? You know my team is Bristol Rovers, and we have a real problem scoring goals recently. And so the manager had gone out to Luton Town and he'd asked if we could borrow a very promising player called Alex Wall. And he's enormous. When I saw him come out on the pitch, I thought, I'm glad he's on our team. He looks like a wall. He just knocks things over. And fortunately, a wall would be a better defender probably than striker, and he hasn't scored a goal for us yet in 4 games. But looking at him, I was glad he was on our team. He's big, powerful. Well, look who's on your side, or whose side you're on. Look at the one who's fighting for you. He is warrior God. And he's fighting against your enemies of sin and guilt and death and Satan. And they're trembling because the tables have been turned. God has strode into battle and he's fighting for his people. You see it in Jesus' lifetime. There are evil spirits in the world and they recognized who Jesus was. And they said to him, you're the Son of God, aren't you? Don't torment us. That's irony, isn't it? The spirits that have done the tormenting are asking warrior God, Jesus, not to torment them. The tables have been turned. Mighty God, warrior God, is on our side. Death quaked before him and was left shattered after him. Thank God our King is warrior God. But he's also so loving. Because here's the next name that's given to him. Everlasting Father. Some of you are probably thinking Isaiah's got his doctrine of the Trinity completely mixed up here. Well, no, he hasn't. The Son is not the Father. The Son is the Son who's given. The Father sends the Son. But what Isaiah's pointing out to us is that he exercises a Father's care and love towards us. He acts as a father to his people. He cares for the weak. He cares for the helpless. He protects. He teaches. He disciplines lovingly and wisely. He nurtures and builds up his family. He brings all of his people into the family. And he'll never stop acting as a loving, caring father to them. Sadly, in our world, we have absent fathers, but Jesus won't be an absent father to his people. He won't abandon his children. He is the everlasting Father. He's not going to give up on you. He's not going to walk out on you one day if you're trusting him. He'll be there always for you. He's wise. He's mighty. He's loving. And here's the last name that we're given here. He is the Prince of Peace. I suppose the one word that we really should have used when we summed up verses 1 to 5 is the word peace. Well-being, security and joy. Well, Jesus is the one who brought about that by making peace between us and God. That's where the problem was. We were at war with God. We faced the prospect of meeting God as guilty sinners facing a holy judge. But God didn't want that. So he sent Jesus to be the Prince of Peace, the great peacemaker who would later, 33 years or so later, make peace through the blood of his cross. The Father, you see, laid something else on the shoulders of this Son. Not only did he place on his shoulders the government of all things, there comes a time, and Isaiah says it so brilliantly, when God laid on Jesus the iniquity of us all. He didn't have any of his own. He's perfect, he's pure, he's sinless. But such is the love of God, such is the love of the Lord Jesus to you, that he takes our place and he allows our sin to be laid upon him, and he takes our punishment on the cross, and the Father clears the debts and establishes peace. That's what this child came to do. It's what he was born to do. He's born to save us and to bless us with all of the blessings of God. Will you receive that gift? It's the greatest gift of all. Will you believe in Jesus as your Lord and have his wise rule, his mighty power, his everlasting love, his unbreakable peace shared with you? I really hope you have the most blessed Christmas imaginable. I hope the yacht was for you and the quad bike, and you let me have a go on it too. And I hope that you find friendship and family time, and for those who are alone, that they're welcomed into families, and there's just the joy of community in your Christmas. And I hope you enjoy your food and your fun, but something will be missing, everything will be missing, if you haven't received the gift that God gave, his Son, to be your Saviour. And a Christless Christmas won't be light or joy or peace. It will be empty. God bless you with the biggest blessing of all, the gift of salvation and life through faith in Jesus, his Son. Amen.